Hi, this is Alistair McCaw, and you're listening to the Functional Tennis Podcast.
Welcome to episode 4 of season 1 of the Functional Tennis Podcast. I'm Fabio, your host and founder of Instagram's Functional Tennis. This week, we're talking to Alistair McCaw. Alistair is a world-renowned sports performance consultant, mindset coach, team culture builder, podcast host, author, keynote speaker, and much more. He's worked with top athletes in many sports, and within tennis, he's famously worked with Kevin Anderson and Svetlana Kuznetsova. He talks to us about his background, working with Kevin Anderson, champions' mindset and characteristics, college tennis, advice to young players, and more. We're also giving away one of his books to a lucky listener. Stay tuned till the end to find out more. Here we go. Hi, Alistair. Welcome.
Thanks very much. Good to be on the podcast.
I've heard so much about you through friends, through tennis players. I've seen all your content online, your podcast. You've 3 books. I haven't read the books now myself, not yet. But I know you know so much in all your areas. And let's start off with telling us a bit about your background. Where are you from? And how did you get into tennis?
Yeah, sure. Well, first off, I was born in Belfast, Northern Ireland, and lived there until I was about 5. Obviously, my parents, we immigrated to South Africa. So I was educated in South Africa. I loved to play sports, a lot of sports when I was a kid. So South Africa was a great place to grow up in, with the weather being so good and all the sports that you play there. So my first love was tennis. I got a pretty decent level in under 14s, and then because of the expenses and once you get to a certain level, you need more coaching and equipment and travel and so on, but we just couldn't afford it. So I took up running, which doesn't cost much.
Yeah, true.
and had a good junior career. I was the South African champion on the 5K. That's running.
Yeah.
And then I took up cycling as well and got into duathlon and competed in 5 world championships in triathlon. So that was my athletic career. Also, you know, doing a sport like triathlon, it doesn't really pay that much. So I'd have to be working at the same time to pay for equipment, etc. And that's when I started working in gyms. When I was about 18 as a fitness trainer, and progress to personal training and then sports performance. And I've really worked for myself from day one. So I really don't know what it's like to have a to have a manager or a boss, but that's how how I started in sports training and personal training and coaching was back then. So that must have been back in the early 90s.
Oh, wow.
And here we are almost, I think, 27 years in the industry, so a bit of experience, and but I keep learning every day. So yeah, so that's a bit of a background.
Where was your first introduction to coach and tennis from a physical aspect? Who was the first player you ever worked with?
You know, it's incredibly ironic is that Neville Godwin was the first player that I worked with. We actually played juniors together, and Neville came to me in the 90s while he was still playing, and he had a good career. He reached 4th round at Wimbledon. I think he won Newport ATP as well. So that was my first introduction through training a tennis player as such. And the ironic thing is that we still work together today. We worked together with Kevin Anderson for 3 years and been helping his new player, Hyun Chung, the Korean, as well. So 30 years later, we're still working together.
Well, that's amazing to hear, having those long, any business or sport, when you're such those long relationships, it means, you know, you're doing a good job and people value what you do. And that's what comes across a lot about reading online about you. When did it switch from so more the physical into the more the mentality side of things? I know you still work on physical.
Yeah, you know, I've always been one about strong mindsets and you know, winning attitudes and so on and so forth. Even I believe a coach or a trainer has to have that to be a good coach as well. You just don't know the skills of technique and whatever it may be. I believe that you've got to have a winning mindset as well. And, you know, in leadership, it all comes down to example. So yeah, I've always had that. I would say the last maybe 7 or 8 years, I started to transition more towards mindset and more the champion minded route, which is the name of my second book. But And then, of course, team leadership and culture and so on. So, yeah, I probably transitioned around about 7 years ago. So that's how that is taken form.
And your book, Champion Minded, what's the main message? Who's it for? Is it for any sports player, for business people? Does it cover all areas?
Yeah, I mean, it's a book that does cover all areas. You know, it's a very simple to read book. It's obviously about preparation, mindset, and motivation. Those three categories. And really the book Champion Minded is about working your hardest, bringing a great attitude every day, you know, having a good work ethic, all these things that are controllable, that are manageable, that you don't need a talent for. And, you know, this is the book was written for that purpose of encouraging people to, you know, get the best from themselves every single day. And you don't have to be the most talented. You don't have to be the smartest or the brilliant. But if you work your hardest, then that's, you know, that's success in itself. So, that's why Champion Minded is
written. All these characteristics of champions, are you saying that they're not innate, that you can actually work, if you work your butt off, you can get these characteristics? You're not born with a silver spoon in your mouth of these unbelievable characteristics. You can actually work and get them.
Look, I mean, obviously, you know, the genetics plays a big part. I mean, depending on which sport you're going to go into. But yes, you know, that's that good old question, are champions born or are they made? And for me, I would say they're 90% made, because, you know, you do need those genetics and those good genes. I mean, if you just look at a Roger Federer at his body type, it's just the perfect athlete right there. You know, he's got strong calves. He's got really, really big calves. If you have look at the shape of his legs, which equals more explosiveness off the ground. He's got that wiry body type as well, longish arms. I mean, he's just the perfect specimen of a tennis player. So, you know, there, obviously he works on his fitness and he works on his body, but there is an example of, you know, someone that is born and made a champion, if I can.
A lot of it's also about understanding your strengths and your weaknesses, and then being prepared to obviously build up on your strengths, work really hard on your weaknesses.
I mean, I've always been one about focus on your strengths, maximize your strengths, because I would say in your development years, yes, you've got to work on your weaknesses, you've got to work on your strengths. But later on, once you've reached that elite level, you know, how much better can you really get your weaknesses? So, you know, what makes you a great tennis player is your strengths. And you know, be it a serve or be it a forehand or whatever it may be. So I believe you got to keep polishing those every single day. It's something that Kevin does. Kevin probably spends Anderson probably spends 70-80% of his session working on his serve and working on his forehand and volleys. I mean, that's where the essence of his game is. So he, you know, he doesn't spend a lot of time on the weaknesses. Once you get to that level, it's just about maximizing your strengths.
I have heard you say in another podcast, that in your own podcast actually, where Kevin is not the most talented guy in the world, and so he just works so.
Yeah, absolutely. He's, I mean, he's just the hardest worker I've ever worked with. Is, you know, it's just a relentless work ethic. That's how he's got to top 10 in the world for sure. He works harder than any player. I can honestly say that. I've obviously, been on the tour for a while, so you get to see who works hard. And I mean, don't get me wrong, everybody works hard, but you know, Kevin's the type of guy. I mean, I'll give you an example. It was before I actually worked with him. It was, I think 2013 was it? I think I was just finishing up with Xavier Malisse. That was his last year. And I remember Kevin playing in Rome. I think he played Berdych and he had lost. And I went back to the hotel and there was a tennis court at the hotel as well. And I heard someone hitting serves, and it was Kevin. And that was probably about an hour after his match. And he spent a good hour and a half just serving. It was just him. No one else was there. No coach, no one. And, you know, already that work ethic and, you know, like they said, champions are made when no one's looking. And that's so true when it comes to him.
I think that makes a lot of sense, having just gone beyond what you have to do. Reminds me, was it during the clay court season where Felix Agurism, I still can't pronounce his surname yet.
Neither can I.
He had a terrible time with one of his service games. He lost a match on double faults, and he was back out there an hour later on his own, just knocking out the serves, working, and obviously that's what you need that commitment to keep pushing forward. So there's all this building these characteristics. When does this start happening in a person, in a child, in a teenager? Does it come from the early years at home?
Yeah. Obviously, you know, it's important that you have to have good support. You see every athlete out there has either had a, we can even call them pushy parent, either the mother or the father. You know, so parents are important. Obviously, environment where you are at, there needs to be good coaches around, and it needs to be good, the facilities as well. So, yeah, I mean, you definitely need those things to become great in a sport or an activity. So environment and people are...
And is it ever too late to start?
Depends what level you want to get to, of course. But, I mean, but you see that the typical age in tennis players is that they started when they were, you know, some of them were 6 or 7. It's very, very unheard of. You hear of someone that's made it after they started at 11 or 12, for example. So, yeah, it's those teenage years are crucial in the development of your skills and your physicality and of course your mentality as well. Is you know, what coaches have you been around at a young age, and how have they molded your mindset as well? That's so those are all very important.
If I'm a parent, if my 13-year-old kid is nationally ranked, I'm looking for a new coach. What characteristics should I look for in a coach or an academy if I'm looking for a new coach or academy? What are the main characteristics?
Yeah, obviously that coach has got to get along with the player, of course. I mean, the player's got to be excited that they're going to go see them every day, because it's going to be hopefully a long-term relationship as well. But, you know, just consistency, good work ethic as well. Are they the example? Do they practice what they preach? Because especially younger kids, that's what they're going to be looking at. So, you know, if you've got a coach telling the players to eat healthily, but they're munching on a Big Mac, then, you know, that's your example right there. They're going to see that. So it's important not to find the best coach, but to find the right coach. And what do I mean by that is the best coach might be seen as someone who's worked with a lot of good players and so on. But the right coach is someone that clicks with your player, someone that has a connection with the player. Because, you know, especially in tennis, a lot of the time is spent on the road, and, you know, you've got to get along with that person, and, you know, you're sharing flights and hotels and meals. So, you know, you're spending more time off the court than on the court. So that's an important area to look at for the right coach. And again, of course, they've got to have some good experience. Not necessarily have to be good players themselves, but it does help. But those are some of the qualities I'd look for in the right coach is are they the example?
And what if you flip it? What if you're a coach and you have potential to work with a few players? What's the main characteristics you should look for in a player? What would be the top three characteristics for a coach to look in?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for me, hunger to succeed is important. If, you know, you're looking at going to the top, passion. They really enjoy. They love the sport, because the more they love the sport, the more they want to do of it. And of course, the right mindset, like I said, like a winning attitude and mindset as well. You know, great athletes to me are very optimistic people as well. You know, they always believe they can win no matter what. And they've got that sense of optimism. You know, they've got to have that. So yeah, so I'd say hunger to succeed, passion. They love the sport, and
mindset.
And my last one. What was my last one again? There, I've just gone blank. Thank you. I think mine's a bit burned out at the moment.
You talk about these characteristics here in a player, and you've worked with two extremely hungry players, Kevin Anderson and Svetlana Kuznetsova, and Kevin Anderson's got to 5 in the world. Svetlana's got to 2 in the world. Obviously, they've both similar characteristics. Was there anything that stands out between them that they do differently that you're surprised at?
You know, every player is different. So, you know, every player I've worked with is completely different in some of their habits and their routines and so on. Svetlana, let's see, also a hard worker, but in a different way. For example, she would put the hours in, especially, you know, she was brought up in Emilio Sanchez in Barcelona, where they just hit a lot of balls. And, you know, she built up that endurance and that work ethic at a young age as well at Emilio's academy. They do a great job there. Kevin came through the college system, obviously. So, you know, he was a decent junior, but went to college and kept developing his game, worked under a very good coach there as well at the time, bred dancer. So, you know, there again, the commonality of these players is they've had good coaches. They've had good, again, we speak about environments to nurture their game and their mindset as well. So personality wise, Svetlana is very, she likes to have fun. She likes to laugh. She likes to, you know, enjoy the good life as well, as where Kevin is a little bit more serious, a little bit more focused. Not to say Svetlana isn't, but you know, they're two completely different personalities. And as a coach, I have to learn how to adapt and change and, you know, adapt to them. It's important for a coach to adapt to the athlete.
It must be amazing from your side to work with these high achieving athletes. And
yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've really been blessed and very fortunate enough to do it. I worked really, really hard and you know, still do, but you know, you've got to put in the work. It's the advice I give to the coaches. You've got to get yourself out there.
Yeah.
I missed many Christmases away from home and birthdays and so on and so forth. So, you know, there were some choices I had to make as well. You know, when you're with players in the off season, you're away from home and usually it's over Christmas. So many Christmases were missed with my family because I was working on my career. So yeah, it does take, I don't like to use the word sacrifice because for me, it's a choice, you know.
And just going to push back, just something I missed out on. You mentioned Kevin went to college in the States. He did quite well there. Join over 10,000 people who have downloaded our free match and practice PDFs over at functionaltennis.com/downloads. Our match and practice PDFs help you plan and evaluate your matches and practices. We have some other free downloads there for you too. So make sure you go over to functionaltennis.com/downloads. What's your thoughts on tennis players going to the States on scholarship? It's a big issue currently. Let's say I'm from Ireland and a lot of the players aren't good enough to go pro, but there's the opportunity to go to the States. Do you think it's a good pathway?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, getting your education funded or partly funded is important, that, you know, they just can't rely on tennis. So they are getting an education. It's a great environment as well. Very competitive. We've also seen that a lot of good players are coming out of the college system. So absolutely, it's I think that should be the first goal and first thing a tennis player who's good at a young age wants to strive for. And I mean, I visit a lot of colleges here in the States as I consult to a few, and it's a really, really great pathway.
From what I've seen, it is a great lifestyle. They get treated like kings over there, and they've the best of everything. And then when they come out, it can be quite tough. But I agree with you. It's a good move there. I'm just going to touch on something different here. I was speaking to one of the coaches here, and they wanted to ask you about balance, not life balance, player balance on court, their game. How important is balance to be a professional tennis player? Physical balance.
Physical balance. Okay. Yeah. For me, it's one of the key factors in movement. I spend a lot of time with players on balance. Probably almost every day they're doing something to do with balance. So yeah, for sure. It was one of the first things when I started working with Kevin, him being such a tall guy, and how players would usually be able to get him on the court was get him off balance, obviously, and change direction. So, you know, we were able to put a lot of work into that. And, you know, after year one, you could see the difference. Year two, year three, and just better and better. And now he's become a good mover for his height. I think it was Brad Gilbert said that, you know, he's probably one of the best movers of the tall club. So, you know, that's a nice compliment coming from him. So yeah, spent a lot of time on balance. I mean, even if it's just 5 minutes after a session after tennis where, you know, you do two or three balance exercises, that's perfect. That's ideal.
I know we're over the podcast
work
here,
on that.
And
balance
you probably
is,
can't
for me, balance
it's hard
is
to explain. Is there just one exercise you can explain?
Well, I mean, even just hopping from one leg to the other and balancing on one leg or changing directions, you know, just take one foot off the ground and even just close your eyes and try and maintain your balance. There's a lot of things you can do. Standing on one leg and throwing a medicine ball or tossing tennis balls.
Science.
These are all things that help the balance. No, not at all. And you know, this is the thing, is that the exercises and the drills I've done with all these players have all been very basic, very simple. They're all just fundamentals. And to get good in something or to become great at something, it's about doing the simple things.
Can you start working on balance at any age?
Well,
can a 10-year-old begin to work on this balance? Yes.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. The younger, the better. You know, look at Kevin, for example. We started working when he was, what, 27, 28, maybe. And we did a lot of balance even at that age, which has improved.
And is there any
game.
Sport so from a young age that can, be, that can relate to, can help with balance?
Age, just, yeah.
I heard like Novak Djokovic was a skier, this new player, Jannik Sinner. He's meant to be, it was Italian champion skiers, balance meant to be great. Is there any other sports which help balance?
Any sport really, that's involves movement. I always recommend that, you know, tennis players should play another sport, preferably a team sport. So, you know, something like soccer or netball or basketball, whatever it is that helps. I mean, basketball and netball are great sports for balance. I mean, those are the two ones I recommend for boys and girls, and yeah, if it's possible. But I play, you know, when I used to have group sessions and players, we used to play a type of form of netball, and where when you have the ball, you can't move, but your other players are moving around the court to get into empty spaces. So I'd do a lot of games. But, you know, one particular one was like netball, which the players love to play. And that's another thing, is working with kids, is include as many fun games as possible into the session. They don't get excited about you pulling out ladders and all these drills and things. I mean, fine, do maybe 10 minutes or whatever, but make sure that half the session
I'm going to ask you one more question. If what would you tell your 15-year-old self if you could look back?
Ooh, 15. I've never had it that far back. That's a very, very good question. What would I tell my 15-year-old self? Maybe don't take life so seriously. Don't be so hard on yourself, but then again, I know that all high performers are pretty hard on themselves and almost near perfectionists. So that's what gets you to that level. But yeah, probably I was really, really hard on myself.
What an interesting chat with Alistair. I hope you picked at least one bit of advice that can help you. You can find Alistair on Facebook at Alistair McCaw page, on Twitter at Alistair McCaw, and on Instagram at Be Champion Minded. I'll link all these in the show notes. For your chance to win Alistair's book, Champion Minded, head over to our Instagram account, which is called Functional Tennis, and leave us a comment on our post about this podcast, and we'll pick a winner. We'll also feature this post on their show notes page at functionaltennis.com. Finally, please tap subscribe button on your favourite podcast app so you don't miss out on next week's episode. Until next week, bye!